Chapter 31. Dinner was sumptuous. It began with an antipasto. There were paper-thin slices of prosciutto wrapped around small pieces of fresh melon that George had ordered from Florida. There were black and green olives and a bowl of cold shrimp. There was wet mozzarella and Swiss cheese and artichoke hearts and cold red beets. But before they began to eat, Marjorie asked Reverend Cooley to say grace. The Cooley and the Pascals had recently returned from Africa. Reverend Cooley was a tall man who was totally bald on the top of his head, but sprouted slicked back sides with his remaining hair. He wore silver-framed glasses, and Ron noticed that he had very large hands when everyone bowed their heads to pray. His wife had curly hair that was kept short. Ron thought that it looked like a bird's nest on top of her head. Reverend Cooley wore a brown and orange plaid sports jacket that looked festive in a garish sort of way. His wife, who was only introduced as Mrs. Cooley, had a patient smile glued to her face, and Ron noticed that it never left. He thought it was the kind of smile that could be described as long-suffering. Dominic Pascal was a big man, which is a polite way of saying that he was obese. Ron counted three chins. His wife, Sheila, was very thin. Dominic was wearing a blue suit with a little American flag lapel pin that Ron noticed immediately. He wished that he had an American flag shirt that he could have worn to piss them off. It occurred to Ron somewhere early in the meal that these people did not particularly like Marjorie and George, and they were there as an act of Christian brotherhood. It was something about the way they pronounced antipasto and kept remarking on how unusual it was to start a Thanksgiving meal with such an exotic dish. Marjorie was oblivious to it all. She wanted to know what it was like in Africa. "I can tell you this, Marjorie. You would never get such a fine meal as this anywhere in Africa." Ron looked up. "Really? You were all over the entire continent?" "Quite a bit of it," said Dominic. "Quite a bit of it over the last 6 years." "What was it like in Egypt?" said Ron. "We were never really up north," said Dominic. "Egypt and Africa are really two different places."
"They are," said Ron.
Reverend Cooley said, "Mr. Pascal is speaking culturally rather than geographically, Ron." Ron nodded. "So, except for Egypt, then it is really all the same?"
"Oh, no. There are widespread differences," said Cooley.
Mrs. Cooley added, "Some of the coastal states, like South Africa, are truly beautiful." Ron shot her a glance. "Too bad about Steve Bilko, then, wasn't it?" George laughed heartily, now on his third Manhattan, and said, "Now, there was a really funny man. Was his name really Bilko?"
"Do you mean Phil Silvers?" said Dominic.
"Steve Bilko just had his brains beaten out for wanting the freedom to organize the true people of South Africa," said Ron. "He was in prison, and they beat him on the head until he was dead."
"That poor man," said Mrs. Cooley.
George reddened and drank. Marjorie got up and cleared the dishes for the next course. Ron got up to help her. In the kitchen, she whispered to Ron, "Please be nice. Please do this for me." Ron nodded and said that he would try. The next course featured the roasted turkey and the stuffing that Marjorie had made for the first time outside of the bird. There was a bowl of cream-pearled onions and a long dish of candied yams. There was a large bowl of yellow turnip.
Then Marjorie walked out with two more bowls. One held string beans, and the other was filled with broccoli. This year, they were also having fresh cranberry sauce, something that Ron had never tasted before. The table filled up under the growing eyes of those seated around it. Ron could have sworn that he actually saw Dominic lick his lips. He was proud of the table that his mother and George set. George was actually an excellent carver of meat, and so the turkey's carcass was neatly stripped. Ron thought for a moment about the way they had hacked up the bird in the past and wound up actually pulling its legs and wings off with his hands and exposed ripped out pieces of meat that made it look like some predator had attacked the game with its jaws and claws. Reverend Cooley said, "Well, this is a magnificent looking table." The guests all looked from one to the other, smiling and nodding their heads. There was the respectful murmur of quiet, and then the murmurs of, "Oh yes, I would love some of that," that came as the plates were passed around the table. As they began to settle down to their plates and eat, Cooley said, "Your mother tells me that you were a teacher, Ron." Ron finished chewing and swallowed and said, "This is my first year at it. Hope to be a good teacher." "Lord willing, I'm sure that you will be," said Cooley. "What did you do previously?" "I spent some time in a jail in Patterson, and before that in a center for the mentally ill in Cranford," said Ron. He was instantly sorry that he mentioned the jail. He saw the look of pain wash across Marjorie's face. He knew that it made her think of her long-searched-for and never-found father. "Some of our greatest minds have time spent in both of these places, Ronald. No reason to be ashamed," said Mrs. Cooley. It caused Ron to grin. I don't think that the young man meant that he was incarcerated in either of these places, Mother, said Reverend Cooley. I think that he was telling us that he worked there. Mrs. Cooley bit her lip and said, "Oh, I am sorry," momentarily put down her knife and fork. Ron saw Marjorie glare at the woman. He wondered what his Aunt Dottie would have said if she had been there. "Please do forgive me, Ronald." "No offense taken, Mrs." Ron paused and feigned a look of confusion. "What is your first name?" The Cooleys exchanged a quick look of tension, and the Reverend Cooley said pointedly, "Mrs. Cooley's Christian name is Gladys." Ron ignored the signal. "No offense taken, Gladys." The Cooleys exchanged the look again. George asked if anyone wanted more wine or cider. Dominic was hunched over his plate and seemed to be shoveling the food into his mouth with the precision of a backhoe. Celia Pascal picked at her food demurely, occasionally deigning to lift a half-filled fork to her mouth and tentatively placing it to her lips before opening the cavity just the slightest bit to place it inside. Then she chewed thoroughly, touched her napkin to her violated lips just after she swallowed. "What do you teach, Ronald?" "English," said Ron. "So, you are a man of letters," said Gladys coolly. "Rather than numbers, yes," said Ron. "What do you do for a living, Mr. Bombasco?" said Reverend Cooley. George had a large helping of turkey in his mouth and held up his hand while he chewed, asking her to wait. Hurriedly, he chewed and swallowed and then blurted, "I'm a printer." "What is it that your company prints, George?" said Dominic, raising his head up for the first time. His face had grown red and his cheeks swollen from exertion. local papers and the Food Town Circular, said George, happy to be on firm footing. He did a man's job. He did it well. It was a time-honored profession. He didn't spend his time in bars fixing games or in classrooms with little girls. What do you do, Dominic? Said Ron. Celia and I have dedicated ourselves to spreading the word of God. Ron nodded. Does it pay well? An electric look of tension passed around the table at the impudence of the question. Reverend Cooley spoke. The rewards are manifest, Ronald. He had just done some reading about the ways the missionaries had helped to rape Hawaii. He knew that his mother had wanted to be a missionary when she was young. He also knew that, for her, it had been a deep and sincere desire to make the world like the world she envisioned that Jesus would have wanted. How do you do that in 1977, said Ron. He shrugged. I mean, I imagine that everyone has heard about it by now. Many are they that listen and do not hear, pronounced Cooley. People were now reaching out for additional food, all except for Celia, whose plate was still more than half full. Ron took additional dressing and ladled some of the surprisingly good fresh cranberry sauce onto his plate. Marjorie took an additional candied yam. Dominic went for a refill of everything. Even the Cooleys took more potatoes and turkey. What I mean is, said Ron, what exactly do you do? Well, with all of the European countries giving up and all this talk of individual states and countries, there is a movement back to the old heathen ways in Africa, and we try to combat that. And how do you do that? Said Ron. He found himself now genuinely interested. For one, we work on old legends and songs, the things that these people believe because they really don't know any better. We sometimes take the melodies of old songs and rewrite the stories, providing an enlightened look at the world. You change their history, said Ron. They really don't know too much about history, Ronald. How do you know that? Cooley seemed to ignore the question. They have folk songs and tales that they tell each other, and we inject the divine presence into them. Ron put down his fork. So, basically, you steal their history the same way that slave owners stole the language of African-American slaves in America. We don't think of it as stealing, more that we are giving them gifts. Suppose they don't want your gifts. We also provide food, clothing, and shelter. Well, that's good, said Ron. Do they get the medicine if they don't sing the songs the way you want them to? Marjorie, I must say that this is the most delicious meal that we have had since returning home, said Gladys Cooley. After the pies and the coffee and the fruit and the nuts, the men went to watch a football game, and the women congregated in the kitchen. Ron saw that the Miami Dolphins were drubbing the St. Louis Cardinals. He had always rooted for the Cardinals because he liked their quarterback, but Miami was just too good, and the game was not competitive. Football didn't live in him the way that it used to. He knew he would never play again, not even in a game of two-handed touch. The men were sprawled with their bellies sticking up like large amphibious creatures sunning themselves in front of the light of the TV instead of being on some rocks watching the sea roll in. He looked at the kitchen. There was a constant clatter of pots, pans, and dishes as the women honored a time-old custom of not leaving each other with a mess to clean. Ron would have preferred being in there, but he knew his presence would ruin Marjorie's being the center of attention. they would all feel compelled to make a fuss over him being there. Or, in the cases of these other two women, perhaps express their discomfort with him not acting like one of the men.